You are listening to a sermon by Gareth Brand, recorded on Sunday, May 8, 2022, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
We talked before the service about some trivia about Mother's Day. I have one other bit of historical trivia that kind of fits with today's theme. Today is the birthday of Anne Auerbach, born in 1874. She was the first Mennonite woman to be ordained in 1911. But she never was a pastor in a Mennonite church. Mennonite churches weren't quite ready for that, so she had to go to a different church. But she was the first woman to be ordained, first Mennonite woman to be ordained. Anyway, a bit of historical trivia. One thing I just want to say, thanks, Rosie, for digging up that rare gem from the 4th century. It would be interesting to sing that hymn. But also, that's one thing I appreciate about Point Grey Fellowship is how you work hard at themes, and I just love being part of your worship because it all fits. So even if people fall asleep during the sermon, you still get the point. So thank you for your work, Rosie, and also last week as well. Damned if you do and damned if you don't, two tales of sexual intrigue. What do they really mean? Part two, Tamar, a feminist foremother, speaks up. Before we get into this story, let's just review the theme of the entire story from Genesis 37 to 50 that we spoke a bit about last week. God's presence is with Joseph, a slave in a foreign country. Why does God's presence matter? Because God wants to save the family of Joseph. Why is God interested in Joseph's family? Because God has chosen this family through whom all nations are to be blessed. We see that in Genesis 12, 1 to 3, at the beginning of this long narrative. Thus, God's universal blessing of shalom is kind of dependent on the continuation of this family line. In the previous episode, the presence of Yahweh, the God of Israel, was integral to the plot toward shalom and blessing for Joseph's family. In this story today, Yahweh's presence is a bit more in the background. And when Yahweh is directly involved, it is in a rather harsh and negative way. Let's also review again what both stories, chapter 39 and 38, have in common. Two brothers are away from home. Joseph, in last week's story, because of forced slavery, and today's story, Judah, because of voluntary and kind of natural emigration. In the previous episode, clothing was evidence for damning the main character. In this episode, it is evidence for the exoneration of the main character. Also, both stories, sexuality and sexual acts, are part of the plot. We noted in the previous story that it became more about power than sexuality, and the same theme will continue today. We can also note that both main characters are outsiders. Joseph, because he was sold as a slave in a foreign country. Tamar, because she was a Canaanite, a woman, and a widow. A bit of background to our present story. Our world is so different from the ancient world described in the Bible, it's difficult for us to imagine this patriarchal society. It is the world of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, and their wives barely get a mention. Women were the property of men. The primary purpose of women was to bear male children, to carry on the family name. If they were unable to do it, then the men brought in alternative vessels. Thus, Abraham brought in the sex slave, Hagar, because Sarah was not giving him a son. Isaac sent a servant to get an in-house wife for him so the bloodline would remain pure. Jacob had four sexual partners who bore him children. The only reason Joseph gets mentioned in a special way is because he's the oldest son of Jacob's favorite partner of the four. But a bit of Canadian history to demonstrate that maybe we are not that far removed. Women were not considered persons in Canada until 1929. No matter how progressive we think of ourselves, we still live in a patriarchal society. Of the 27 churches in MCBC, do you know how many have lead pastors who are women? It's a rhetorical question. Let's get back to the background of Genesis 38. In a patriarchal culture, eldest sons were at the top of the value hierarchy. So behind the plot of the story of Genesis 38, there is an important levirate law that states that if a man dies without a male heir, his younger brother is to have sex with his widow to carry on his name. This is found in Deuteronomy 25, 5 and 6, if you want to check later. So that's an important law behind our present story. So part two, Tamar, a feminist foremother, speaks up. First of all, and another odd bit of trivia is that the male lead in our present story is Judah, who is the fourth son of Jacob. There's nothing special about the fourth. I'll just leave that bit of trivia alone. Suffice it to say that Judah has abandoned the practice of his grandfather Isaac to choose a wife from his own people. He moves away from his family and marries a local girl who is a Canaanite. We don't even know her name, just her father's name, Shua. And she bears Judah three sons. All is kind of normal so far. Judah gets a wife named Tamar for his eldest son, Er. In the first of Yahweh's two appearances, Yahweh kills Er for an unspecified wickedness. So he dies. The oldest son dies without a male heir. Then the law kicks in that I mentioned before. And Judah asks his second son, Onan, to have sex with Tamar to produce an heir for the eldest. There's no consideration for Tamar, even though the law had specified the woman's involvement, which is kind of interesting. Deuteronomy 25, 7 to 10, if you want to look it up later. There seems to be no recourse for her in this case. It is all about the male heir. Her well-being is dependent, as it was for all women in a patriarchal society, her well-being is dependent on a relationship to a male. Onan, the second son, then compounds the oppression of Tamar by accepting the opportunity to have sex with her, but then practicing premature withdrawal to prevent impregnation. For this specified wickedness of refusing to honor his older brother, Yahweh kills Onan as well. And that is the end of Yahweh's directly stated involvement in the story. Legally, now, Judah is obligated to order his third son to fulfill the responsibilities of the law. It seems the third son, Shelah, is still underage, and Judah is worried, and for understandable reasons, that he's going to lose his remaining son. So out of this concern, Judah deprives Tamar of the one chance she has left of fulfilling her role to produce a male heir. And so he sends her back to her father, a childless widow, the ultimate insult. The trail of death continues as Judah's wife dies. Time passes, and even though Shelah, the third son, had now grown up, Judah had still not given Tamar to him as a wife to continue the family line. And this is when Tamar takes matters into her own hands, in a way that neither law nor custom would approve of. But the motive is right: to honor her late husband by continuing the family line. She hears of Judah's sheep shearing journey and dresses up like a prostitute and sits at the city gate to wait for him. And Judah, after the prescribed period of mourning his wife is over, decides to engage the services of a prostitute that, unbeknownst to him, happens to be his disguised daughter-in-law. Well, they haggle about the price for sexual services, and just to make sure he pays up, she demands some personal items, his sash, seal, and staff as kind of collateral or down payment. Later on, when Judah sends the agreed-upon price, a young goat, and to get his personal items back, he sends somebody else. No prostitute can be found because Tamar has taken off her disguise and has gone back to her father's house as the young widow that she was. And nobody else knows about any prostitute in the area. Judah doesn't want to investigate any further because he might become the laughing stock of the town if it's found out that he's frequenting prostitutes, so he drops the case. Yahweh seems to reward Tamar for her loyalty and ingenuity with not one, but twin sons to carry on the family line. Surely this is a double blessing from God. It would be nice if this were the end of the story, but the ending is a little bit messier than that. When Tamar is 3 months pregnant and beginning to show, Judah is told that his daughter-in-law Tamar is guilty of prostitution, and as a result of her prostitution is pregnant. He is furious and demands that she be burned alive in a public square. A few things to note here in this climax of the story. There's no trial here, and Judah seems to make the call without consulting anyone else. Since Judah had actually sent her back to her father, she is actually no longer Judah's property, but is her father's property. Judah also makes no attempt to locate who the impregnator was, even though that was part of the Levitical law. If you check Leviticus 20, verse 10, it does take two, and both parties, there was specific punishment. Also note that his ordering of public burning was beyond the law. Public burning was reserved for daughters of priests who committed adultery. Check Leviticus 21, verse 9 on that one. So Judah is elevating himself to a priestly sort of status, here by ordering this kind of punishment. But this all sets up the shocking punchline. Tamar's brilliant plan prevented the worst from happening. She holds up Judah's personal items and says, "The one who owns these items is the man who impregnated me." Kind of a gotcha. Judah would be indicting himself if he pursued the case. So he relents and says, "Tamar has acted more righteously than me." He realized his mistake and confessed it. She was doing what he should have done. Wow. As Evan said, this is the word of the Lord. It is in our holy scriptures. What do we make of this story today? Firstly, we need to state the obvious, and that is that not all stories in the Bible are meant to be prescriptive of our behavior. The story is descriptive of a patriarchal system that surely is oppressive and sinful, to say the least. It does not promote the shalom for all that we believe is central to the gospel. Yet Yahweh, the God of Israel, accomplishes divine purposes even in the midst of evil systems. Now, Tamar is the undisputed hero in this story. She has been denied both justice and dignity. And there is nothing in the patriarchal system that will give this to her. So she takes it into her own hands. This is not unlike our present movements for racial and sexual equality. She claims for herself the self-worth and self-determination that the systems denied her. And we continue to be plagued by these same systems. Tamar claims the self-worth, dignity, and justice that all people deserve. If the systems do not allow for it, then it must be claimed in subversive and unconventional ways, as she did. Judah recognizes this. Do we? Tamar, the feminist foremother, is speaking up. Recall again the main point of the Joseph narrative, of which this is a part. The preservation of the family so that through them might come blessing to all peoples. Tamar is part of the same story. And as was already mentioned in Matthew chapter 1, verse 3, she is listed in the genealogy of the Messiah. Tamar speaks up. This is consistent with the way that Yahweh worked in other situations. And these women were already mentioned earlier in the service. Another Canaanite prostitute, Rahab, also became part of the people of God. She's the ancestor of Boaz, who marries another foreigner, Ruth, who also uses some subversive and unconventional tactics to become part of the ancestry of David and ultimately the Messiah. Yahweh is a God who speaks up through marginalized people. Are we listening? Feminism is not only about the elevation of female voices, but the voices of all marginalized people. Indigenous, Black, colored, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, non-binary, asexual, the young, the old, the disabled. It is about hearing the voices of all marginalized people through whom God speaks. Tamar is speaking up. Are we listening?